You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
This is the Classic Auto Mall Show. Broadcast from the studios inside the Classic Auto Mall in Morgantown, Pennsylvania, just 1 hour west of Philadelphia at Pennsylvania Turnpike Exit 298. Featuring nearly 1,000 classic, vintage, and barn-find vehicles for sale under one climate-controlled roof. Now, here's your host, Classic Auto Mall president and the man with all the toys, Stuart Howden.
Well, here we are, show number 138. Is that hard to believe?
It is hard to believe.
Welcome to the show. And boy, we had a beautiful day today and our cars are coming in. I love it. We just saw a 68 Cutlass convertible come in yellow, black top and red line tires.
Making room for a C6 going out.
Yeah, the blue C6 that just left with only 5,000 miles.
Beautiful car.
Those are hot all of a sudden.
Yes. Huh? Yes. C4s are coming up and C5s and C6s.
Just when we have it figured out. It is so unpredictable. Last week, we hadn't sold a Model A in about a month and a half. And last week, we sold four.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's weird.
I don't know why. There must be something on TV or in the water.
As Johnny Carson would say, that is wild. That is wild stuff.
Thanks to the Pat Travers Band for our theme music. And they are out on the road, I think, still touring. I think they were over in Europe. So if you get a chance, go see them and tell them that Classic Auto Mall sent you and that we'd like Pat to be on the show. And anybody can make that happen.
Come on in.
And welcome to our listeners on WWDB Talk 860, part of the Beasley Media Group, and it's also simulcast on 97.5 HD2.
That's right.
In Philly. So we're terrestrial.
We're taking over the world, one station at a time.
Yeah. 949 is in the inventory as we speak. We can actually move around now. Mm-hmm. We were having a little bit of issues with getting around and getting the golf carts through and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Because we had a lot of cars in here. We had 1,100 and something in cars.
And I know we don't group cars by make and model, but some of them are ending up next to each other.
I think they're like mating.
But if you walk by one day and there's a little model car on the floor between them, you'll know it happens.
Yeah, exactly. They've made a baby. So, man, some of the new arrivals this past couple of weeks is amazing vehicles. The 32 Ford Model B convertible sedan that came in. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness gracious. This thing, black over Bordeaux red, really a rare build. You don't see many of these. It's got a 383 stroker in it.
Of course it does.
Yeah, because...
Is that a resto-mod? Would you call that a resto-mod?
Yeah, I guess it would be a resto-mod.
It's kind of like technically it is.
Yeah, it's not really a hot rod as much as a resto-mod because it's 8 throttle body injection, modern rodder feature car. Hmm. So they... Near flawless. This is really an interesting car. And only 275 miles on it since they restored it. Hmm,
beautiful.
Or built it, I guess would be a better term. The seats came from a Corvette. I mean, this thing is just really spectacular. And it's... price at what you would expect for something that took probably 1,000 hours or 2,000 hours. You always read about that and you think, did somebody really add up all the hours that it took?
You know, it's a funny story about this car.
Yes.
When we first got it in, it's always in the back, you know, the back section. And I was just, you know, leaving for the day and just, I always check out the cars that are in there because I like to touch them when I'm going to write about them.
Right.
And I opened the door to that one and closed it and it was just something different about that. And then I got the details and everything and realized that this is a high-end build.
It's funny. You can look at two cars sitting side by side at a car show, and they both look very similar, and you know, they both look like, oh, they're pretty comparable. Mm-hmm. But when you really start looking at the details, you can tell the difference between this car and, you know, any other 32 Ford that may have been customized or hot-rodded or resto-modded or whatever you want to call it. And then you start realizing the difference. The problem is that it's hard to show the difference when you're talking to a client in California, and they're looking at the pictures. Yes, they can see that it's a little bit nicer, but it doesn't convey when you slam the door and how it sounds like a solid thud.
It was. It's a thud. Exactly right.
Like it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And you can't always convey that. So we have to, that's why the videos work and the walk arounds that we do with them. And
yeah, not every 32 Ford closes with a thud.
No, they're a little tinny sounding normally when you close the door.
Depending on the level of restoration.
Right, right. If they added more of the insulation into the.
This one sounds like a modern car.
Into the door. Yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And a beautiful build, and it's, you know, black and just gorgeous paint. I mean, black is one of those colors that it can be great or it can be not so great, depending on who the applique person is. But you know what? I forgot to talk about where of our cars went.
Oh, you want to do that?
Yeah, okay. I forgot all about that. I got right into the new arrivals and forgot about where we sold cars this past week. How about Holcomb, Wisconsin, Ellington, Connecticut, Collingswood, New Jersey, Eders, Pennsylvania, Buskirk, New York, Douglasville, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Emaus, Pennsylvania?
Emaus?
Is that really Emmaus? Emmaus, Denver, Pennsylvania, Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, Annandale, New Jersey, Narvon, Pennsylvania, Phoenixville, Pennsylvania, Watchtown, New York, Newburgh, New York, Leander, Texas, Plymouth, Indiana, and Murfreesboro, Tennessee, right outside of Nashville.
That's right.
So that was 18 sold. That was a weak week. I'm going to have to get on the guys.
Slow week here at Classic Auto.
Is that the best we can
do? Slackers. A bunch of slackers over there.
I'm telling you, the phones don't stop ringing. They just don't stop. It's amazing. And Kathy can move her arm a little bit more after that ski accident that she had,
right,
where she shattered her shoulder.
No more skiing for...
No, she's ready to go again.
Oh, really?
I mean, not today.
Right.
She's ready. It's been five, almost 6 weeks since the accident. And but she says, I'm skiing again. She says, I'm not letting this get me.
Good.
And you know... So she's no quitter, and she's tough. So
good.
Other new arrivals this week, the 92 Mazda Miata MX-5. This is a neat little car, black over tan, 51,000 actual miles, garage cab. It's got the rare C package, 1.6 liter, double overhead cam, 113 horsepower, inline four, which everybody, if you haven't driven one of these or haven't experienced one of these, you go, well, that doesn't sound like very much. Go drive one of these. It feels so much fun. It's low to the ground. Mm-hmm. That low center of gravity gives you that sensation of speed, so much more. And they're fun to cut the corners and the apexes, and they're just a blast to drive. And they're easy to drive. Anybody can drive them, maybe not 10-tenths, but anybody can drive them in a, you know, fairly aggressive manner and feel pretty comfortable.
Yeah, they're. I mean, it's why they've been in production since 1989 or whatever, whatever it is. They're really... just a great, well-balanced sports car.
Yeah, and of course they're usually a lot of people use that as an entry level car, but then they realize that, hey, this is a pretty good car. Why do I, you know, I don't need to go for anything else. What else do I need? You know, what's the next thing? What's the next step over this? 911 or, you know.
Oh, well, Honda S2000,
which are a blast to drive.
Or a Z3, you know, if you're into that kind of thing.
You're into those kind of things, yeah.
But
Honda S2000, I've never driven one, but everybody says that they're really worth their while to drive.
Well, you had an opportunity. We had one a couple months ago.
I know. I'm busy.
Came and went.
I'm busy.
You are too busy.
I don't get to do the fun stuff. I don't get to go test drive the cars. I have to be the one who sits in the office and make sure that we have enough money to keep the lights on around here. And I hear you guys out puttering in the parking lot. I'm like, God, that could be me. That used to
be Mike
me.
Started up a GT350 today. I nearly blew out my eardrum.
Are you talking about the late model one?
Late model one.
Yeah, we featured that in one of our ads. Those things are really... They're just an amazing car. And of course, you know, there's so many variables in the Mustang world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, we'll talk to our guest about it because they're, you know, the price guides on these things. I mean, there's, you know, 17 different variations every year of a Mustang, and kind of like the old days when you used to check the boxes for what you wanted when you ordered a car. Did you ever order a car new?
Not like that. No.
Never did.
No.
Neither did I.
The only new car we've ever had is an 87 Volkswagen Fox in 1987.
You are fired.
That's it. I buy mostly pre-owned, as they say.
Kathy ordered an IROC in 1985 went into the dealership, checked all the boxes, picked the colors, picked everything that she wanted. I've never ordered a new one either. I bought new cars.
Yeah.
But I've never ordered a new one. Nope. But that process, I guess, is over. Can you go to a dealer
now? No, you can. You can still order online.
And
you can
say, I want this.
Spec out
this,
a BMW.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yep.
And maybe even take delivery in Germany.
You could do that.
Or take delivery, I think, in South Carolina, where they have their factory down there in the track.
Oh, yeah, and get track time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how cool would that be?
It would.
I would think that would be the ultimate driving machine way to buy the ultimate driving machine.
Yep.
You know? Oh, my God. The next car. They just sold one, too. We just sold one last week.
Uh-huh.
To sell. 1986 De Tomaso Pantera GTS5.
GT5S.
GT5S. You're correct. I keep doing that backwards.
I do, too.
Because you think number.
There is a Pantera GTS.
Right.
So it makes sense that it would be the GTS/5,
but
it's not.
Not, because they're just trying to confuse us.
It's a later model.
Red over saddle and black, 59,000 actual long-term owner miles, rebuilt 351 Cleveland with some Wilwood brakes to add a little more stopping power for it, which is okay. No harm, no foul. One of supposedly 38 in the U.S.
Yes.
But it's an Italian. It's a supercar before there were supercars. I mean, this thing is really amazing. And I was watching one of the auctions last weekend, and one of them brought huge money.
Mm-hmm.
And then a first-gen Pantera 72 that had, I think it had 1,500 miles. It brought probably world record money as well, too. And for years, a Pantera was the bargain.
You know,
they were quite the bargain. Of course, they were a little temperamental. They could have been back in the day.
Yeah, overheating issues.
Yeah, it couldn't be sorted out. And the noise, because that engine is right there.
It is in your back seat.
Yeah. We had one at our disposal when we were in Southern California that got to drive from time to time. Hmm. And that thing, I somehow the throttle kind of got stuck on me driving it one time, and it was getting hot and the temperature gauge was going up, and I was just desperate to get it back to the house because it didn't belong to me. And we had one of those Southern California driveways that's got this severe angle. I hit it at about 30 miles an hour and bounce the rear end, and then you got to go through a fence to get to the garage in the back, and it's got about that much clearance, meaning like a half an inch on either side, and shut it off, and the thing's smoking, and luckily nobody's looking out the window, and I got inside and then acted like I had nothing to do
with it. And he still doesn't know who did it.
Yeah, still wonders who messed that car up, you know, what was wrong with it. This thing is pretty special, though, and lots of activity and lots of interest. All of our clients are clamoring over the Pantera. So if you get a chance, all of these cars you can see on our website, classicautomall.com, and go there and click on inventory, and you can search by year or make or model or price or, you know, there's a lot of different ways to search, and a search bar in there as well, too. Other new arrivals, 1973 Volkswagen Karmann Ghia convertible. Love these to death. Black over tan. This is a good-looking little car.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's got the kind of knockoff mini light wheels. They're not mini lights, per se, are they?
No, I don't think they're real mini lights, but they're the copies, and it looks great on them, actually.
Yeah, it's really, really a cool little car. And the Karmann Ghia, you know, that's something that when people see it, and a lot of people don't know what it is, they're like, what is that? I've never seen one of those before. And you think, gosh, wouldn't that be so prevalent? But, you know, maybe if you're in the car world, you see these things more than you see them just in the regular world.
Right.
I don't see them at the Walmart in Morgantown.
You don't, not anymore, anyway.
No, I do not. Don't see a lot of things at the Walmart in Morgantown, except lots of cars and trucks and SUVs with rust on them.
That's right.
Anyway, when we return, we'll talk to our special guest, Dave Kinney, who's joining us via Zoom from somewhere down in Virginia. We'll be back with the Classic Auto Mall Show in just a minute.
Stock number 5702 for sale by consignment at Classic Auto Mall is a beautiful and completely restored 1963 Pontiac Grand Prix. It sports a 389 cubic inch V8 that's been upgraded to tri-power with over 300 horsepower. It has a Roto Hydromatic 375 three-speed automatic transmission with safety track rear axle and 323 gears. One of the hidden gems of this classic Pontiac is the rare optional cruise control knob just to the right of the steering column. The interior is a light new condition and includes an AM/FM push button radio. It has independent coil springs in the front, four link with coil springs in the rear, and power drum brakes on all four corners. It also has factory dual exhaust, and you can see all the details in nearly 100 photos at classicautomall.com. Classic Auto Mall has more than 1,000 cars for sale via consignment in our massive climate-controlled showroom in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. Classic Auto Mall, a great place to buy or sell a car through consignment because it's safe, easy, and secure. Plus, we advertise, sell, and ship worldwide. Easily search for your next classic at classicautomall.com.
When it comes to car magazines, are you tired of reading about mega-dollar collector cars you can't afford, or endless reporting on auctions and how-to tech stories that don't interest you? Then Crankshaft is the car magazine for you. Crankshaft is a 144-page softcover quarterly filled with all sorts of fascinating stories, the type of car features you won't find anywhere else. It features American and foreign cars, pre- and post-war era cars of distinction including sports cars, muscle cars, and regular family sedans too. To discover what many car enthusiasts are saying is the best car magazine ever published, you can purchase either a single copy for $12.95 plus $3 postage, or a one-year subscription, four issues, for $59.95. To order your copy, go to www.crankshaftmagazine.com. That's www.crankshaftmagazine.com.
Since the 1960s, J.C. Taylor has been America's premier specialty insurance provider for classic cars, antique autos, modified, and custom vehicles. Our customers have trusted us to protect their prized possessions for more than six decades. For more information, or to receive a quote, contact our expert team today by calling 888-ANTIQUE or by visiting our website at jctaylor.com/awr. That's 888-268-4783. Or visit jctaylor.com/awr. Drive through time with peace of mind. J.C. Taylor.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
We're back with the Classic Auto Mall Show from the Classic Auto Mall Studio in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. Joining us via Zoom is our friend Dave Kinney. Hello and good morning, Dave.
Good morning. How are you, Stuart?
I'm well. I'm glad to see you're at home because you don't get to spend much time at home, do you? You're on the road.
I'm at my office, so I'm not on the road. But the office is a little bit better to do a Zoom call from than my house, where the dog or somebody else is always has precedence.
Yes, I understand that completely. We get people are starting up cars in the background here, so we try to keep everybody away, but you know, business goes on, right? You have to keep
absolutely doing it's got to.
The collector car market for us has been, the past couple of months has been probably the best that it's ever been. Are you hearing the same thing from people on the street, or?
You know, stuff is selling. I mean, there's prices that are up and prices that are down, but the most important thing is that that cars are selling. And sure. I think that's great. It's looking to shaping up to be a great year. The springtime has been good for most of the dealers I've been talking to. There's variances and, you know, we're talking about, you know, used to be we talk about the old car market. Now we have to talk about all the different segments of the old car market, right? Because, I mean, you were talking about a Miata and a Pantera here. Just a few seconds ago, you know, they're kind of different cars,
right?
But they have collector car interest, both of them. So, you know, and then we get back into the old stuff and it's a lot different, but yeah, the market's doing good all over. Pretty much.
Well, it's funny too, because you see, a lot of the auction houses have much more, late model inventory in the sale, whether it be Porsche 911s from the 2000s and Ferraris and Lamborghinis and all these high end cars are fairly new.
And 10,000, Mercedes Benz SLs. That's my favorite. It's like, you know, go to this, you know, supposed Highline auction and you're at a used car, I mean, at a Mercedes Benz, at least used car lot. But there's a lot of that.
Boy, so. there certainly is. And there are so many in the BMW 3 Series and the 4 Series and all that. But if you look at like the M Series of any of the BMWs, they have become, you know, very, very pricey. Even an M3 from, you know, 89, which you don't think of as being as a collectible car. It probably wasn't as powerful as the new ones and all that stuff. It's very collectible.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing that everybody has to keep in mind. Like, we're minting more collectible cars every single day.
Right.
And, you know, you and I were both alive in a time when collectible meant it had to be over 25 years old. Now, pretty much collectible means that you can't go out and buy a new one.
Right.
You know, so there are collectible cars from a year ago. And, you know, the definition changes basically, but it's all good. It's all part of the marketplace.
Well, and if you buy the top of the heap, whether it be a Porsche 911 or a Mustang or a Corvette or whatever, they seem to go up in price almost immediately from the time that they're offered for sale. A Z06 Corvette all of a sudden is worth $50,000 more than it stickered for, and that's because it's, I guess, supply and demand. Is that
Yeah, that's a big part of it, Stuart. I mean, you know, here we've got a great example. Camaro just ended production. Apparently the ones that are still in stock at the Chevrolet dealers are becoming a very valuable commodity. I mean, you had mentioned Mustangs. You know, we thought of Mustangs for a long time, not 64 and 65 when they were a little, you know, sparse on the ground, but in the 70s and the 80s especially, they're kind of like commodity cars. You go, you buy, you drive, you have fun, and then you get another one. Well, now, you know, they're very, very collectible, and even the newer Mustangs are the same way. I mean, people are buying them and equipping them so that they're basically with collector status kind of built in.
Sure.
So it's a different marketplace.
How do you bake those into your price guide? For those of you who don't know, Dave is the publisher of the Hagerty Price Guide and also a senior appraiser with his own company, US Appraisal. And so with the price guide, how do you bake in these new Mustangs and things like that? Or do you wait a few years?
The good news is that we wait a few years before we put them in there. So
that's my
secret sauce is I don't have to put the 2023s in yet. Okay.
Gotcha.
So we're concentrating on, you know, for Hagerty, we're concentrating on kind of the core of where the people who are buying cars are. So even though we might have a 4-year-old Ferrari in there, it'll take a little bit longer for us to get the Mustang in, for example.
Right.
But you know, we're working really diligently. We got 15 people on the team, if you can believe it.
Wow.
That do it, you know, full time. So, you know, we like to say that, you know, we're a guide and not the gospel. You know, we don't get them all right all the time. Right. So if somebody's upset at me about that, you know, send me an email and let me know what your thoughts are. But in the meantime, you know, we like to keep our pulse on where the, you know, where the collector car market is. So, you know, it's funny because we get requests all the time for putting a specific car in, and then you drill down and, you know, they built 17 of them. That's probably not going to go in the price guide right away.
Sure.
But the one that they built 1,700 or 17,000 of, or those are the ones we have to concentrate on first.
Sure.
The good news is that we go back now before pre-war. It's all online at Hagerty.com. It's all free. If you go in and you start, you know, asking for a lot of values, they're going to ask you for an email address, but, you know, you can just go ahead and sign up, and then, you know, you're in.
How do you figure out the outliers? The two guys at an auction bidding against one another, each with a cocktail in hand, and I'm not giving up until he gives up, and he's not giving up until I give up. And how do you bake that into the price guides, and how does that factor?
You know, basically, you look at a scattershot. So right. you've seen a scattershot graph with every single car, maybe as a pinpoint on the graph. Well, a lot of the times you look and you see that, you know, two drunk guys at auction. Or the opposite of that, which has happened recently at a sale that I saw, nobody paid attention to it, and so a car sold for much less than it would have. I mean, this is a car that, had I been at that auction, I could have bought it and taken it to Classic Auto Mall and probably made about 60 grand on it. But, you know, that's the auction business, and that's the world that we live in. So sure. When we see something like that, when we see an outlier, we always tag it and say, is this where the market is going? Or is this just kind of a one-off sale? My favorite example of this was years ago, before the Mercedes Gullwing was $1 million car. They were always, you know, hanging out at 800, 850, right. 900. And one sold for $1.3 million, I think, which was just, you know, earth shaking.
Right.
And, so I went and I talked to a couple people, and it turned out the guy who bought it was bidding against a guy from Silicon Valley, and right. he was another Silicon Valley guy himself, by the way. But the car, you know, if you remember the 300 SLs, they have the born-on date on them. They have the you know, the physical date when it was ready to leave the factory. It happened to be this guy's birthday,
wow.
and he was not going to lose this car. So, you know, a typical total outlier, but until you check it out, then you don't know.
But do you think that when somebody sees one sell at that inflated price, and I don't mean necessarily inflated, but the higher than normal price, does it make other people ease into that and pay a little more money the next time that one's on the market, thinking I don't want to miss it? Or, you know,
I like to say that it gives the next guy permission to spend a little bit more. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, we like to say that we don't follow people, but we do.
Right.
You know, we want to know that we're not the dumbest guy out there because we're the one who paid 1.1 million because some guy paid 1.6
right.
or whatever, or even 30,000 where everybody else has been buying for 22,000. So, but my philosophy has always been, and will always be, buy the best you can afford and buy what you want.
Right.
I mean, I don't care if you're, you know, if you want a Stutz Blackhawk, fine with me. That is awesome. I want one, by the
right.
way. So, you know, it's a personal thing. If you want to have some car that everybody, you know, points at and goes, wow, I don't even like that thing. That's
right.
fine with me. I don't care.
Right.
Because you know what? It should be about getting something that you enjoy, not what everybody else enjoys.
Well, we've all seen cars at auctions. I see cars here at our place that I think nobody's going to buy that. And yet there's a guy who collects those and he's into those kind of things. And you know what? At first we used to be, in this hobby, maybe a little bit snobbish about stuff like that. The Gazelle comes to mind, or the Bricklands and things like that. The more I've gotten into the hobby and older, I realize that, you know, listen, just because somebody likes something doesn't make me right and him wrong, or me right and him wrong. I mean, it's what you love and what you desire, and that's cool. If you like a Gazelle, then that's power to you, man. Enjoy it. I mean,
You know, it's funny that you mentioned Bricklands because, last year I saw one that had been, let's just say, remanufactured by its owner, and it was perfect and everything fit. And,
wow.
you know, the doors went up and down and all that. And he had, you know, put a brand new interior, but the correct interior in and everything else. And it was stunning. It was just like walking back to 1975 or 1976. And, you get a new appreciation for it a lot of times when you see something like that. And then you realize, this is a hobby. We are on the business side of it, but it's a hobby. Now, here's the thing. I was talking to somebody about this the other day. Well, if I buy a collector car and I have fun with it for a while, am I going to make money? And I looked at him and said, if you were a gardener and you just spent $30,000 putting new plants in everywhere around your house and whatever, do you really expect you're going to get $30,000 back when you sell your house because you put it in?
No.
It's not always that way.
Right.
It's about having fun. It's a hobby.
Yeah, that's a great analogy, though. I love that. Well, I mean, and then you look at cars that are just so crazy out there. I mean, if you look at some of the cars, the Clenays and the Zimmers and the Excaliburs and all those crazy things. And
do I bring this out in you, Stuart? I'm sorry.
It must be, Dave. You always get me talking about oddball stuff. Of course, hey, you're Avanti aficionado. So, I mean, that gives me free reign to say anything, right?
Guilty as charged. Guilty as charged.
But, you know, remember, like, the one that cracks me up the most was the 917 Laser, which was supposedly a 917 Porsche, but it was so outrageously styled and weird rear fins, and you don't even see those. They're probably collectible. If you had one that went across the block, it'd probably break the bank.
And not only that, you know, it's a car you could just put a blanket on and have a picnic because it's got all that real estate in the rear end that you could, invite four or five people over for a, big dinner, right?
Yeah. It's, I remember back in South Florida, back in the 70s and 80s, you would see those cars around, all the Clenays, the Excaliburs. Most of them, I guess, were built down there as well back in the day, but, the Clenays were really nicely done. Maybe they shouldn't be in that same category. They were pretty well built cars.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, you had mentioned a couple cars that are home built, like the Gazelles, and they were as good as the person who built them. And a lot of the times you'd find an engineer who did it as his side project, and you'd want one of those.
Right.
But if you had a DIY guy who was really used to using caulk and putty a lot, probably not the one you want to buy.
Yeah.
Those are probably all gone now. They've probably been recycled to the great, non-auto mall in the sky, but the good ones are around now.
Sure.
So that's an interesting thing. Road quality is a big thing when you're talking about low production cars.
Right. Well, if you look at like the Factory 5 Cobras, I mean, the variations from one to the, from the worst to the best is just a dramatic, could be thousands of different variations of level of how you did it and way you did it and all that good stuff. And then you put that into an auction or, onto the website to sell. How do you know the difference? We were talking about that earlier. How do you know the difference between one that was really done right and one that was sort of done right?
Yeah, it's tough because, especially in an auction scenario, I mean, there's good things to say about auctions and bad things to say about auctions. And a lot of times, you roll the dice and I've made a lot of money on cars that I've bought at auction before, but I'm not going to talk about the ones that I didn't make money on that I bought at auctions. But a lot of the times you have to be, you have to be your own detective. You have to listen and look and smell and watch and everything else. And then, it's always fun, when you're looking at cars, it's always fun to take a buddy along who knows more than you. But keep in mind, if it's your passion and it's what you want, take that buddy's advice, but don't take it, for gospel there, because a lot of times, that person, that woman, that man who's with you doesn't have the same perspective. And, perfect example. I am not a wrench. I cannot fix things.
Right.
I'm the guy who, I didn't invent the checkbook restoration because somebody had done it before me, but you don't want to see a car restored by Dave Kinney.
Right.
Okay. Because number one, it wouldn't be a car. It would be, stuff ready to haul at a dump.
Right.
But, here's the thing. I won't take advice on a number of different issues, among them, what my personal preference is. And I think a lot of times somebody brings somebody along and they go look at a car and that guy, that gal, whatever, can be a bummer to the thing. And, if it's your passion and you've always wanted it, you should probably go for it if you have the money.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it is your checkbook, by the way. When we return, we will continue more of our conversation with Dave Kinney on the Classic Auto Mall Show from the Classic Auto Mall Studio, Morgantown, Pennsylvania. We'll see you in a minute.
Stock number 6267 for sale by consignment at Classic Auto Mall is a rare, low mileage Italian-American 1986 Di Tommaso Pantera GT5S supercar. This
Pantera is powered by a rebuilt 351 Cleveland V8 and is purportedly one of only 138 built between 1985 and 1989 with integrated steel fender flares and chin spoiler. In fact, it was the only one of 38 imported into the United States. This car has a mere 59,656 title verified miles with about 8,000 on the engine since it was rebuilt. It currently rides on custom-made 17-inch billet replicas of Pantera wheels with NASCAR spec power disc brakes by Wilwood. The car has been meticulously maintained and the original wheels and brakes can be included when purchased. The rear engine Pantera has a 5-speed transaxle, GTS tubular headers, dual electric fans, and an 8-quart oil pan and engine cooler. This is a very rare opportunity to own an amazing Di Tommaso Pantera. See all the details and nearly 100 pictures at ClassicAutoMall.com. Classic Auto Mall has more than 1,000 cars for sale via consignment in our massive climate-controlled showroom in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. Classic Auto Mall, a great place to buy or sell a car through consignment because it's safe, easy, and secure. Plus, we advertise, sell, and ship worldwide. Easily search for your next classic at ClassicAutoMall.com.
If you love classic cars, you're going to want to listen to the Classic Car Show with Tom Cox and Richard Lentinello on America's Web Radio. Live every Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern at americaswebradio.com or on demand on your favorite podcast app.
Since the 1960s, J.C. Taylor has been America's premier specialty insurance provider for classic cars, antique autos, modified, and custom vehicles. Our customers have trusted us to protect their prized possessions for more than six decades. For more information, or to receive a quote, contact our expert team today by calling 888-ANTIQUE or by visiting our website at jctaylor.com/AWR. That's 888-268-4783. Or visit jctaylor.com/AWR. Drive through time with peace of mind. J.C. Taylor.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Dave, we were talking about, valuation and, you know, it's your checkbook when you go to buy a car for you. But the fear that we all have is if we go buy a Chevelle, and we go home and our neighbor is the Chevelle expert. And he's going to all of a sudden tell you everything that's wrong with the car, everything that's this, everything that's that, because he's the expert, right? So that's why people, you know, you're almost afraid to buy it to take it home because you don't want to be the joke of the neighborhood. You know, you want to be the cool guy in the neighborhood.
Well, the thing is that more than likely that guy's the joke of the neighborhood right. Because I it's about having fun, Stuart.
Right.
I'm going to double down on what I said earlier. I've owned cars that I know that people, I own a brown Bentley and my neighbors call it the UPS truck. Okay. I mean, it's an old Bentley convertible and it happens to be the exact same color as a UPS truck and it probably weighs more, by the way, too. But I just, it rolls off my back. I enjoy it. It's kind of fun. And, it's like, here I am making deliveries, whatever, but I'm not stopping at your house.
That's right. So. How about Ralph Marano's got a Packard that's UPS brown? Did you see that?
It's beautiful.
Beautiful. And you think if you said to me, UPS brown on a Packard, I'd say I couldn't even visualize it. And it's magnificent. It looks just so elegant, so spectacular, such an amazing car. And, and of course, Ralph, you see it almost every Concours that you go to. Are we over Concoured? Do we need to wind back a little bit?
I've been saying this for about 10 years. I love going to Concours. I love going to car shows of all kind. I love going to Concours, but we have too many out there and I don't know, everybody's allowed to do it. And, it's America. Thank God we all have the, the ability to if we want to go, if we want to start one, whatever, but it gets to be when it's every single weekend, it kind of loses some of its pizzazz. Right.
Right.
And they're all, kind of fighting for the best cars and all that sort of stuff. I love the whole concept of the Concours de Le Mans, with the cheap cars and the outrageous cars and stuff like that. I think that was a brilliant concept. And, keep in mind that the heart of this hobby, as far as I'm concerned, has been revived by one thing, and that is Cars and Coffee or whatever you want to call it. They call it the kind of neighborhood or, you know, county or, you know, what, depending on where you are. I mean, where I live, there's 1,100,000 people in my county.
Right.
I mean, we could have any kind of car show that you want here. But, you know, I love the things where people get up on Saturday morning or Sunday afternoon or whenever they go. And it's just, you know, it's the ultimate run what you're brung, but it's not a race. It's a, you know, it's a fun car show. You hang out with folks, you talk to people, you know, you grab a sandwich or coffee or whatever, and then you leave. I think that that's, it's brilliant because it's not organized. And I think that's what the younger generation than us really, really wants. And I love it.
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head on my preference on Cars and Coffee versus a car show is that a car show expects you to stay there till 4 o'clock in the afternoon to wait for the judging. The Cars and Coffee, you come and go. You go, you got an hour to spare. You show up, you hang out for an hour, you leave. You got all day to spend.
You know, and I can't hang around on that lawn chair in my jorts and my, you know, my members only jacket and my New Balance, what, 455 shoes. You know, I just can't do that all day, right? Can you?
No, and I don't want to. Even worse. Well, because, you know, I'm getting thin on the top. So if I forget to wear a hat, then I'm really in trouble. So.
Wow, yeah. You're preaching to the choir on that one.
There's a Cars and Coffee that we just attended a couple of weeks ago, or last week, I guess it was. On the main line, Cars and Coffee that they do. And I bet you they had 1,500 cars show up. And it was just a, it was a parade almost all day long of people coming and going, and people had to get, you know, things to do, and you can't spend all day there, but a couple hours here and there. But what was interesting was, is the things that really stood out at the Cars and Coffee were stuff that at any other car show would be the herd. The yellow 57 Thunderbird. It was the only Thunderbird that was there, and it stood out because of that. Whereas you go to any other car show, there's 20 of them, you know, or you know, so it was interesting that, that what was unique there, wouldn't be unique at a regular car show, or just, I guess for, you know, the plastic trophy car show we call.
Years ago, I went to Cars and Coffee here locally, and somebody brought their VW Jetta Harlequin. Do you remember what that was?
No.
They're, from the factory, they had all different color panels on it. So right. The front fenders were different colors. The hood was a different color. Oh. The roof was a different color. The trunk. It's called a Harlequin, which is a, you know, an Italian clown.
Right.
And they would wear those, you know, those patchy type of clothes with the different colors. And there was a Lamborghini Countach next to it. And I walked up to the guy and I said, dude, you have the coolest car here.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you could imagine somebody who spent money on a car that had all different colored fenders and roof and trunk and doors from the factory.
Wow.
I can't even imagine the person who did that, but I congratulate them. And I think that's what you find at Cars and Coffee. Mm-hmm. You're never going to find that, you know, on a Concours field.
No.
You know, I don't know about the VW shows. I would assume that they would probably accept those cars, you know, open hand, you know, open-mindedly, right. I guess, you know, whatever, because it was built by VW. But I just love when you see stuff like that that you don't see at other places. Like you said, you know, 57 Thunderbirds, they used to be everywhere, absolutely everywhere. Now you don't see them quite as much.
No.
But, you know, great cars and you know, for those of us of a certain age, you know, great memories too.
So. Yeah. Will you ever see a 57 Thunderbird or a 65 GTO win a top tier con, you'll never see one win a top tier Concours, will you?
Well, it is changing. I will say that. I mean, I know that there are, you know, when you talk about top tier Concours, you're basically talking about 4 or 5 car shows
right.
in the country. And then, you know, we won't go to the ones that are in other countries.
Right.
But I think that, I appreciate a Bugatti Type 57. Don't get me wrong. I love those cars. I will never be able to afford a, you know, $5 million car, you know, and so I appreciate it for what it is. So I like when, you know, these, a lot of the Concours are doing a 30 under 30 class. Mm-hmm. So they have people under 30 years old with cars worth under $30,000. I think that's a great idea. You know, a couple of Concours are having that. But will they win? No, they're not going to win. But, you know, the world changes. I mean, there was a time, you and I were both alive, when a Ferrari GTO and a Rolls-Royce Phantom 3 was worth the same amount of money. And, I mean, that's changed a little.
Yeah, drastically.
Just a tad.
Just a tad. Well, I can tell you that at one of the Concours we were at a couple of years ago, there was a Buick GS there in a butterscotch color, and I would have loved to have seen that win Best in Show, because I thought that car was spectacular.
But of course,
you know, you're preaching to the choir. I remember years ago, probably now 15 years ago, I went to Hershey, and the only car I remember on the field at Hershey was this dude's AMC Gremlin that he had completely restored, absolute number one condition, Concours condition car. And I was, you know, I mean, my tongue was hanging out looking at it. It's like, this is the coolest thing here, because somebody took a car with very little value and put all this money, but more importantly, all this heart and all this love into it. And I thought that was great.
I saw a Toyota Celica recently, a mid-80s Toyota Celica GT that was literally perfect. It had been restored and it was perfect. And it just caught my eye. I just couldn't stop looking at it because, you know, we all remember those and they were pretty cool in the day. They weren't spectacularly fast or anything of that nature, but they were cool cars. And man, this thing just, and it was so different. It was so nice to see something like that, that somebody put way more money than it's ever worth. And who cares? You know, it's like the hot rod builder. He comes to me and says, well, I spent $100,000 on my car. Okay. That doesn't have any bearing on what it's worth now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's unfortunate in one way. If they're expecting to get that return, hopefully they got the psychological return, the happiness return, all that sort of stuff. And that's, you know, like I said, I'm a value guy. That's what I do for a living. I'm an appraiser. I publish the Hagerty Price Guide. And so my life is full of values, but I really, really love it when we get a story for somebody who, you know, I had a client. I don't use names here.
Sure.
Very, very, very wealthy guy. And he passed away. And his son was the one taking care of things. And he followed me around, and I had another person with me when we were doing the appraisal. And he wanted to know everything about it. And it was one of these things where, thank goodness, this guy, you know, his love of these cars that, you know, that he's inheriting from his dad. And there were a lot of very special cars there. And he and his dad had owned a couple cars together. He wanted to know all about the process, and he wanted to learn, and he wanted to know more about the cars and what we were looking at and all that sort of stuff. And I'm going, there's an enthusiast.
Yeah.
I mean, he was an enthusiast, and that's the cool part.
Yeah, his first question wasn't how much is it worth. His first question is, why does it exist, and how does it exist, and who, you know, all of the important stuff. And let's face it, you know, if I were to inherit a house full of antiques, I would know nothing about them, and I'd have to have somebody who knew about antiques tell me about them if I wanted to, you know what I had. And that's the problem.
You know, yesterday was not only the day my mother died, but 40 some odd years ago, but also was her birthday. And I get together with my brother and my sister, and we go to the grave to bring things down here a bit. I will tell you, you know, the funniest thing that kind of comes up recently for me, I remember a skillet my mom had. And when my father passed away and they were getting rid of the estate, the most important thing for me to have was that skillet.
Right.
Because my mom and I would have conversations, you know, while I was helping out, but she was really cooking that grilled cheese sandwich and stuff. That's where the memories are. And you couldn't pay me $10 million for that skillet. It's the same thing if we put it in cars. A lot of times the memories are worth so much more than the value of the vehicle.
We've seen so many people who said, I don't care what it costs. I want to have a replica or a duplicate of what my dad or my grandfather or I had back in the day. And I'm going to do it, and it doesn't matter. Mel Tillis comes to mind when he did that 40 Plymouth that he did, because he had one and he spent $85,000 on a 40 Plymouth four-door sedan in gold. And he said, I don't care because I want it. And that was
That's the overriding thing that I want everybody to remember when we're talking about this. It's sure. just so important because, you know, and it's not what your neighbor thinks is cool. It's what you think is cool.
Absolutely. And I think that a lot of people get hung up on the wow factor or something. You know, every guy will tell you if he buys a car that was celebrity owned, oh, that doesn't matter. The minute you get in the car, what's the first thing he says? You know, Tim Allen used to own this car. That's the first thing they tell you. So people are funny like that, but you know, does celebrity add value? That's a whole nother rabbit hole we could go down. I think in certain, obviously Steve McQueen, it matters, but you know, a car that was used in a movie that nobody's ever heard of, it doesn't really mean anything, does it? Am I missing something there?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's cool because, you know, you have a little bragging rights with it. But if you have to explain, you know, I call them explainer cars, right? You have to explain what the movie was. No. It was really a Hollywood movie, seriously. And it was out like for 3 days before it went to DVD, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, and it's funny you mentioned Steve McQueen because we've had that discussion recently. There's an entire generation and a few more behind it that doesn't know who Steve McQueen was. By the way, in case you don't know, he was the King of Cool,
right.
You know, in the 60s, and it lasted in the 70s and 80s and 90s, and even in the 2000, you know, he's been gone quite a few years, but you know, the King of Cool to a, you know, 22-year-old today is not that person.
Sure. And I tell you, and anything he touched turned to gold. I mean, you look at some of the prices of watches that he owned or sports cars or motorcycles that he owned or even pickup trucks. They all break the bank, you know, and again, when you do an evaluation, tricky to put a valuation on him touching it and what that means.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the more related to what he was known for. So, you know, a Ferrari from Steve McQueen is much more important than his Hudson Hornet, which right. he did have. But the Hudson Hornet's, you know, important as well.
Sure.
But like I said, fame is fleeting. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. You know, as infamy, you know, a lot of times the cars are from people that you really wouldn't want to hang around with.
Right.
But they became very, very famous. We're thinking of gangsters here.
When we return, we'll delve more into values and what's going on in the market and what the future holds from the Classic Auto Mall Studios.
Ever since the first time you saw it, perhaps even as a child, you knew you wanted one. Now, you're at a point in your life where you have the means to buy and keep one. Your significant other is even in agreement. But where and how can you find one? And trust you know as much as you can about it before the purchase. That's why there's ClassicAutoMall.com. 1,000 classic vehicles of almost every conceivable make, model, and year. All under one climate-controlled roof. You can visit and look to your heart's delight or do everything online from the comfort of your own home. Shipping nearly everywhere worldwide, Classic Auto Mall can make your dream come true. Visit the World Wide Web at ClassicAutoMall.com.
If you want the truth about politics, medicine, weapons, classic cars, and more, you'll want to tune in to America's Web Radio. You can listen to all of your favorite shows live at www.americaswebradio.com or on demand on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. That's www.americaswebradio.com.
If you love classic cars, you're going to want to listen to the Classic Car Show with Tom Cox and Richard Lentinello on America's Web Radio. Live every Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern at americaswebradio.com or on demand on your favorite podcast app.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the americasbroadcastnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Back with the Classic Auto Mall Show with our friend Dave Kenny from U.S. Appraisal and the publisher of the Hagerty Price Guide, which is a wonderful resource for all of us, which we reference quite frequently here when we're trying to show value and what the market has said about a particular car. And, of course, we hope that we're giving them advice that will allow people to get into the hobby who had never been into the hobby before. And one of the things that is doing that are these colleges now that are out here that are teaching automobile restoration. One of them, McPherson College. And is that in where is that?
McPherson, Kansas.
McPherson,
yeah.
Kansas,
yeah.
Of course. And you're on the board there, right?
Yeah, I'm on the advisory board of McPherson. I'm a very proud member of the advisory board. You know, we've had a lot of growth in the college. I recommend anyone who is interested, you know, if you have a son, grandson, daughter, granddaughter who's interested in cars, you know, take a visit out there. You know, go out and meet some of the people there. You should call first.
Yeah.
But they also have next weekend is the end of April, 1st of May is their what they call the Cars Show. It's the student-led show that's happening on Saturday morning, and it's fantastic. And there's this little company called General Motors. Maybe you've heard of them.
Yeah.
They bring four cars out from their heritage collection, to be there. And so you can find out which four cars are coming up by, logging onto Facebook and going to McPherson, Auto Restoration. The program has been growing. People learn how to do things. It's a great, great school because you get the liberal arts education, but you also can learn, you know, about not only how to build cars, how to rebuild cars, how to do upholstery, stuff like that, that, you know, that is scary as hell to me because you don't want to see me in a needle anywhere around trying to fix something.
Right.
I'm going to break something.
Right.
But, in the meantime, I'm just so enamored with the students there and what they're doing and how they're doing. And, you know, just last week I ran into a McPherson student at a classic car dealership. I run into them now all the time,
right,
because there's now a big group of people that are either working on cars or working around cars or doing stuff car related. And it's, you know, now we've got, you know, a few of the people are in their 40s who are graduates.
Wow.
You know, who graduated when they were in their early 20s, and they're really making a difference around there. They're, you know, they're people that are, there's a woman I know who does welding who, you know, graduated from there, and she's just top notch. But you got to go see the program. And for somebody who is, you know, interested in getting an education, but getting a really, really well-rounded education in a field that you and I both know pays good money for people who repair things. And there's less and less of those people out there.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the shameful things we've done in this country is get away from shop classes in high school. You know, we looked down our nose and we decided that everybody needed a 4-year degree and everybody needed to own a house. And that was a bad path we went down because, you know, the top mechanic at the local Mercedes dealership probably makes $250,000 a year. The guy who works at the top restoration shop, that's the guy, probably makes more than that. And you know, there's nothing wrong. Most of our customers are blue collar guys who made a business out of it, have been successful. We always jokingly say they'll drop $150,000 on a resto mod Camaro. They'll bitch about a $3 bottle of water and they still buy their clothes at Walmart.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's our client.
My favorite thing is the guy who gets back from Vegas and he's just spent $1,500 for the weekend gambling. And then the next day he misplaces a $20 bill and he tears his house up looking for it. Right.
Isn't that funny?
It's all about perspective, right? Well, I'm a big fan of, having that option as well, because we don't have an apprentice programs that are any good in this country, and
right.
So I say that if you want to go to college, which I did, and I'm happy and I'm sure. Proud that I did, and I learned a lot more about people than anything else, I guess. But to have the opportunity to get a 4-year degree and to learn about the business of automobile restoration. You know, I have a person's not too terribly far from you who's a graduate of McPherson. I was just really impressed with the work they did for me. Part of it was because they learned communication skills.
Yep.
We've all taken stuff to a restoration shop and 6 weeks later call up and say, hey, what's going on? Oh, you owe me $9,000.
Yeah.
It's like, what? You know, whatever. It'd be nice to get a bill, for $2,000 and then another one for $3,000 and an explanation why the other one's going to be, $4,000. And so, that's all part of it. It's a big part of it is communications, but learning what the customer wants and learning how to do that. So I've been really, really happy with working with McPherson, and I think that the program's growing and it's going to grow more. They even have a great program that if you work while you're going to school there, and every $10 that you make, they forgive $1 of your education bill.
Nice.
So some of the guys out there are farm boys, and they run the combine all summer, and they make more than you and I do in the summer, I think, than we do all year long. And so, there's a bunch of people now graduating owing no money, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, we'd love to see more of that, certainly. There's worse things we could put our money towards as a country, towards education and helping people.
Absolutely.
And
but I agree with you. We need to, we need more welders than we need more people, who, are administrators at some IT T Corporation, something like that.
Sure. Well, you and I, both of what we do, there was no template for what we did even 20-something years ago. It was just like we just kind of figured it out as we went, and especially on pricing. How did you know what to pay for a Mustang in the year 1995? You really didn't. You just kind of guessed and hoped that you were right, and usually you could sell it for a profit, and that was a lot of fun when you were a dealer back in the days like that. But there was no roadmap for what we did either in the collector car auction business or in the just in the car business in general.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
We you watch some of these the evolutions of auctions, and for example, Barrett doing the all no reserve thing. I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago that they had discussed or talked about, or the path they were going was to start going with a reserve, and everybody thought, you know, there's no way that they're gonna, you know, carry the same weight that they carried when they're going with a reserve versus no reserve. And now they're back to all no reserve and seem to be doing better. It's kind of weird that that worked out that way.
You know, I think like every single business, and it's so apparent when you're, you know, when you're an auction company, you know, what your kind of goal is and what you're going for. And I think that a lot of the times, yeah, I'm not going to call it a niche because they, you know, right. some of these auction companies have become, you know, mega million-dollar businesses because of hard work and what they did. And, right. and you know, it doesn't hurt to be on TV. We all know that. But I applaud them all, every mm-hmm. single one of them that's, you know, been able to stay in business. But they've found their own level. I mean, right. you know, basically, Barrett Jackson invented the resto mod. I mean,
right.
you know, they promoted it. They made a big deal out of it. And now, you know, it's a giant monster. And I see that people, you know, not my thing. I mean, right. you know, and that's fine because the old car world is so huge now, you know, but I respect them for doing that and the people who go ahead and do that because it's the modern incarnation of a hot rod is right. what it is. We don't think of a hot rod with something with a 20-year-old Mustang body on it. That's a resto mod.
Right. Exactly. Even though it's basically the same concept, yeah. just in a different presentation, if you will. And, you know, I think that, you look at, you know, some of the bigger, you know, Mecum, I mean, they've got to be a $1 billion company now. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, without yeah. question. And it's funny because if you think back in the days when Cruise was doing basically what Mecum's doing today, just Mecum built a little bit better mousetrap when they were doing it. And television, like you said, whole lot to do with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Dana Mecum, you know, he grounded out and they're hardworking people.
Oh, I mean,
you know, we used to joke about that, you know, they take 2 weeks off, but the other 50 weekends they have a sale. I mean, you know, and they're always fun to go to too.
That's sure.
I love auctions. I know you
Me
do too.
Too.
You know, I'm that guy who I'm driving along on vacation and I see a farm sale and hopefully my wife's not with me because she's like, no, we're not going to do that.
No.
But I'll just pull over there and, you know, and you're looking at like, you know, old bowls and, you know, bowling trophies and this sort of stuff. And boy, I'd love to have that. And you have to, you know, you have to take yourself and you know, slap yourself on the hand and go, no, I don't need it.
So, you know, that's so funny. Listen, there are so many things in this hobby that are kind of insider information that we know about and things that we think about that people don't always get and people don't always understand and all of the history of what's happened in the auction and classic car world. I mean, if you look back to the days when Tiny Gould and the Barretts and the Jacksons were all doing Dean Cruz back in the day were starting this hobby when nobody knew what was what and people just put prices on things to just, okay, that sounds like a fair price. And look what it's spawned to today. I mean, go to Monterey and just get overloaded in a week.
Yeah, yeah. It's talk about a place you got to take cash to even play with. The Motel 6, $79 a night until that week, and then you just add a zero to it, $790 a night, right?
So, what would an Earl Scheib outlet in Monterey charge to paint a car during Monterey week?
Any car, any color, $25,000, right? $29,000.
Yeah. I remember a buddy of mine took his Thunderbird and had it painted at an Earl Scheib, but he did all the prep work and it actually turned out pretty good.
A friend of mine had a little Fiat 500 that right. his girlfriend drove and he did the exact same thing and it was like, you know, you really paid like $60 for the paint job, and he did. Yeah, the tires were yellow as well, right. by the way.
Yeah, but, just,
you know, what the hell,
they weren't really paying attention to, you know, that be damned. So we were talking about the other day the best automotive advice and sayings that are out there, and my favorite, and I know you probably got a few,
but Bruce Meyer said, buy the best, you'll only cry once.
Yeah, that's a great one. That's absolutely, you know, the price goes up when the top goes
down.
That
was Dean Cruz, yeah.
Yeah, that's Dean Cruz's right there. And boy, he said it about 10,000 times.
Oh, yes, he did. Alex Rosie said, when selling a vehicle, there is no perfect vehicle, only perfect representation of a vehicle.
Yeah, that's I like that.
I did too. I like that a lot. And then the last was Seinfeld said, the Prius crushes the soul of life.
yeah, that was true until the new Prius came out. Have you seen the new Prius?
Amazing. They're amazing cars. It's just crazy.
What the hell happened? I mean, it went from a little thing that you put next to the door to prop the door open to a pretty good looking car.
So.
Yeah.
So surprising when you get in things anymore that are new and fairly new. So anyway, really enjoyed having you on, Dave, as always. This is your second time. So you're our first alumni, guest that we've had, and we really appreciate
it. Is that right?
You. Yeah.
That's
so
great.
So thanks.
Hope to come back again. It's always a lot of fun.
It always is.
I promise I'm going to stop in the auto mall and surprise you one day.
We sold your van, by the way. Sorry. So.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I have been there before. As you know, yes. I'll give you an endorsement. If you're anywhere near where the Classic Auto Mall is, just go. I mean, it's fun. Doesn't cost a thing.
Right.
And, you get all your steps in one afternoon if it's raining, right?
Absolutely. We give it to Take care, Dave. So good to talk to you.
Great seeing you. Take care.
You've been listening to the Classic Auto Mall Show with your host, Stuart Howden. Executive producer, Steve Saphir. Produced and engineered by yours truly, J.R. Russ. Available on ClassicAutoMall.com, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Music courtesy of the Pat Travers Band. For tour dates, contact, and stuff, visit PatTravers.com. Produced by CarSmarts Media. Copyright all rights reserved.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.